Hi, I'm Connor, and this is Learn English with Everest, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then, step by step, explore the language used. This episode is the fourth and final part in our mini-series about the Cambridge exams, the advanced and the first, also called the CAE and the FCE. So we have looked at all the other parts of the exam so far, except for the listening and writing parts. So we're going to have a look at them today. Joining me this week is Kevin, a teacher here in Everest with lots of experience teaching the Cambridge exams. We'll give you some tips and advice about improving your listening and writing skills and go through the two parts of the exam in detail. And along the way, there will be lots of useful vocabulary and other expressions that you can use in the exam. And don't forget, if you miss anything, all of the vocab, the grammar, the materials, everything is at everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So that's everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So we're going to start this week with the writing exam. How do you improve your writing generally? And what should you do to prepare for the exam? All right. So, hi, Kevin. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hello. Thank you.
So we're going to be talking about the writing exam, first of all. So would you have any tips or ideas or good ways to improve your writing inside and outside the classroom?
Yes, certainly. I think writing is one of the things that students perhaps don't practice very often. So first of all, practice as much as possible.
Yeah.
It's not something that people do every day, but try to practice as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, if you're living in a country, it's hard to avoid speaking, but it's pretty easy to avoid writing if you want to.
Of course, I mean, even as a native speaker, I don't write in English every day.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so yeah. It's something you have to find time to do, and preparation for an exam, of course, you need to kind of work it into your routine.
Or do the things as well that you maybe would do in your language, like even sending WhatsApp messages or stuff like that, even small bits of writing in English could be good.
To kind of train yourself to do it, yeah, definitely.
Any other ways you could kind of find things to write or what
yes,
else could
of course.
You write?
I think finding something you enjoy doing as well. So if you start a blog about something you're interested in, or you want to keep in touch with friends or family back home, regularly writing to them, or finding somebody with a shared interest and writing things, giving feedback to them and asking for feedback for the things you've written.
So 'cause it's a bit disheartening if you're just writing for the sake of writing. There's no real purpose.
Exactly. Yeah. If you have a target audience, or you're writing about something that you really enjoy, it's a lot more motivating. And of course, it gives you the chance to practice new structures, to try and be adventurous with new vocabulary. So find something you enjoy writing about, and
or even something you need to write. Like a lot of people, if they're here in Dublin, they're looking for a job. So you're writing a cover letter, you're writing a CV, and that especially the cover letter is really good practice of your kind of formal English and that
definitely
sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think something like that as well. It's also good if you can find someone who can give you feedback. And also suggestions about how you could change it or improve it.
Yeah, because I think like when you're speaking, if you speak to a native speaker, they may well just kind of quickly correct your speaking. And that's kind of an easy thing to do. But it's harder to find someone who you can say, hi, I've written 5 pages of English. Will you correct it?
Oh, yes, so certainly. Yes.
That's a good friend if you
have
one.
It is a very good friend and or a teacher.
Or a teacher, yeah.
And then, of course, if someone corrects your writing, you actually physically have those corrections that you can look at, in your spare time or when you're preparing another piece of writing. So you have a record of your mistakes. And of course, learning from your mistakes in anything is one of the best ways to learn.
So find some motivation. Don't just write for the sake of it. So this expression, to do something for the sake of it, is to do something just because you want to, but not really for any good reason. So, for example, maybe you're at a meeting and someone asks a question just for the sake of it. So it's not because they really need to know the answer. It's just, because they like asking questions. You know, there's always somebody like that at a meeting. So Kevin also says to work writing into your routine. So to work something into your routine is to add something to your routine, to make it part of your schedule. And as we say, if you can find someone to help you, that would be amazing. You know, someone who can correct your writing so you can really learn from your mistakes. If someone can correct your work and then you can keep it and go back to it, you have a record of your written work, which is great for lots of reasons.
It's also a good way to see how you've improved, because after time you will hopefully not make these mistakes and you can see your progress.
Yeah, I think it's good as well to keep a record of the mistakes that you make again and again and again and again, because when it comes to something like the exam, if you have certain mistakes that you know, there may be simple mistakes like you accidentally agree an adjective and a noun or something like that. You say, you know, lovelies, girls, or, you know, yes. something like that. And if that's like just an easy mistake you make very often because that's how it works in your language, that's the sort of thing you can quickly look for. When you finish a piece of writing, you can say, okay, I always do this. Let me just check how I've done it here.
Yes, of course, and moving on to the exam, if you leave a little bit of time at the end of the writing so you can go back and check for those mistakes. Especially the ones you know you regularly make.
Yeah, I think proofreading in an exam and in an important email and an important letter, anything like that is going to be important.
It's vital,
And then just thinking as well about how to get corrections and stuff. Have you used any apps or online programs or heard students talking about ones they like? Or
myself, I've heard a lot of people recommend Grammarly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I've used myself, but I've heard very good things about it from my flatmate, from students. So that would definitely be something that is worth looking at.
Yeah. Even just the spell check on, Microsoft Word or online, if you're writing things, and there's the little red line and the little green line, and they're going to help you a lot as well, because, honestly, most of the time when you're writing in any language, you're writing on a computer. So the spell check is there. So make sure you don't have Italian spell checker on your English document, or that it's just turned off or whatever it is. It's also a good way sometimes to learn about the differences between American and British or Irish spelling, that, you write color, C-O-L-O-R, and it underlines it because that's not how we spell it here or that sort of thing. So that can be useful too.
Yeah.
So you have lots of resources to help, even if you can't always get someone else to help you. So you are a resource for yourself if you proofread. So proofreading is to read back over a piece of work when you're finished, specifically looking for any mistakes or any problems. You can proofread a document for work, or you can proofread an email or anything like that. And proofreading is really important for the Cambridge writing exam. You should definitely leave some time at the end for proofreading. There are other resources too. You can use a dedicated online program, you can use various apps on your phone, and even simple things like a spell checker. Now, let's move on to the exam itself and look at things in a little bit more detail.
If you're doing the writing part of the Cambridge First or Advanced, they are very, very similar. They both involve one compulsory question, which you have to do. It's an article. And then in the second part, you have to do one more question, but you have a choice of three. And the thing that they're really looking for in the second part is that you understand the difference between how you structure and which vocabulary you use for, say, a report or a review or an email or a proposal or anything like that. So they'll give you some information, some things that you can use, kind of guidance for the piece of writing, and they want you to really show that you understand the different functions of writing. The main difference really between the two exams is you're just writing a little bit more in the advanced exam. So it's 220 to 260 words, whereas the first is 140 to 190, which might seem like a lot of words, but isn't really that many words.
No, it's not really. Especially if you've been practicing and you're looking at the clock when you're practicing and you start to time your writing. It's not a huge.
Easy to say as a native speaker. Of course. And so what are the examiners looking for? How are they marking your writing?
First of all, one of the things that might seem very obvious but is important to say is that, have you actually answered the question?
Yeah.
The content of your article or your review or your email could be fantastic, but does it respond directly to the question.
Yeah, and that's 25% of the marks. Yes, so like that's very significant. Yes. Yeah, it's like, because you're being asked something very specific, so you need to answer exactly what you're being asked. The content of what you write needs to be exactly what they're looking for. It should be easy to get marks on that section of, you know, answering the question.
But of course, with nerves during an exam or feeling pressurized because of the time, people might just quickly read the question. But I would say read the question carefully, highlight keywords, and, you know, ask yourself exactly what do you think they are looking for.
And so then the content then is the first part. Then there's communicative achievement, which is another 25%. So what do they mean by communicative achievement?
So here they want to know that you've completed the task using the correct type of language. And obviously different styles of writing, different tasks require different types of language.
Yeah, yeah. So a business report doesn't look like an email to your friend.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, those kind of ones are very obvious. They're really big differences. But then there are differences between, you know, a proposal for something and a report about something. Or they're both kind of formal, but they're formal in slightly different ways.
And the structure might be a little bit different. The layout, the way you present the information can also be different. This is one reason we recommend why that you read widely as well as practicing your writing to familiarize yourself with the different styles of writing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the more you read, even if you're reading stuff that sometimes you're not massively interested in, it's good to be very aware of what does a business proposal look like? What does a review look like? What does an article look like? What are you trying to do within these different things? You know, are you trying to persuade somebody? Are you trying to lay out facts? Or, you know, how they differ?
Yes.
And then talking about sort of laying out things, there's also another quarter of the marks for organization.
So these are the first two things the examiner is looking for. Content, have you answered the question fully and addressed all of the issues? And communicative achievement. Have you used the correct type of language? Have you successfully communicated what you need to communicate? There are four areas in total. So the other two then are organization and language. So what are we talking about here?
Structuring with the introduction, the conclusion, and the development of the idea, the way it's organized.
Yeah, and you need to sort of signpost what you're going to say, use all those obvious words like firstly and secondly and next and then and however, and, you know, these cohesive devices or linking words, you know, you have to use these on a high level exam.
Of course, it needs to flow, it needs to naturally develop, and everything needs to connect.
Yeah,
in a necessary way.
Yeah, yes. And I think as well that students often think that it's sort of grammar and vocabulary that they are the things that are where you're going to get all the marks. And obviously you get marks for good grammar and for well laid out sentences and so on. But the language aspect is only another quarter. You know, it's only 25%. So content, communicative achievement, and organization is 75%, and then the final aspect is language. So if you make a few grammar mistakes or you make a few spelling mistakes, you know, you're not losing.
It's not the end of the world. It's with the language, of course, it's a good chance to show a good range of different types of expressions, phrasal verbs, any idioms that might be appropriate to the writing. And of course, using synonyms to avoid repetition.
You should, within reason, you should take risks with your grammar and your vocabulary, especially on the advanced exam. If you're almost sure of a nice structure to put in, I would just put it in. And even if you get it a little bit wrong, it's not the end of the world, and you get it right, it really demonstrates your level, as opposed to sort of playing it safe.
Yes, I think with vocabulary is, of course, if the structure's there, fantastic. But if you're using more complex expressions or words or synonyms, as we say, you really just lift the level a little bit more.
It's not a test of your general knowledge. It's not a test about how much you know about a particular subject. The topics are always very general, but if you kind of feel like, oh God, I don't really know anything about this area, like that really doesn't matter. Nobody cares if your writing is very obvious or predictable or cliched or anything like that, if it's beautifully written and well laid out.
Yes.
all that kind
and
of
it's,
stuff.
And it's interesting to read because of the range of vocabulary, because you take a few chances with, you said, expressions or idioms or phrasal verbs that you might have seen.
Yeah, like better, you know, five really nice pieces of vocabulary and one of them is spelt completely wrong than zero interesting pieces of vocabulary, you know, it just kind of give it a go. So
because these are, I mean, at the end of the day, these are, of course, higher level exams where you need to lift every aspect of your language, including the vocabulary.
And if you want a high mark, you have to show that the examiner can't just assume you have the knowledge. You have to show them. So
take some risks. Don't play it safe. Another good expression, to play it safe, to not take enough risks, just to do everything the easy way, the way that you know will work. In the exam, you need to show the examiner what you can do. I also use the expression here, within reason. So I say you should try to take risks within reason. So this is a good expression too, meaning to do everything you can, but not if it's something ridiculous, not if it's going too far. So, you know, I'll do everything I can to pass the Cambridge exam within reason. You know, I won't drink 30 cups of coffee and study for 72 hours with no sleep. That would probably be a bad idea. So what about some other tips then when you're taking the exam on the day? We talked about proofreading, giving yourself time to read through everything to make sure you catch any simple mistakes. What else does Kevin recommend?
How important do you think it is to sort of make a plan or an outline of what you're going to do?
I think, well, a plan for the writing is of course, extremely important. The structure, as we said earlier, the structure helps to develop the argument and present it in a clear way. And of course, depending on the type of piece you're writing, making sure that you're using an appropriate style of language. So thinking before you start writing, before you put pen to paper, what register should I use? Is it an email to my best friend, or is it an interview cover letter, or is it a business report? And what kind of language do I need? And putting yourself in that frame of mind, you know, I'm writing a business report, doing an exam. Yeah. I'm writing a business report.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like you say, you know, what type of thing am I going to write? What's the appropriate language? And then how am I going to structure this? So, you know, write down in front of you, this is going to be paragraph one, paragraph two, paragraph three. And then you've got the content right, you've got the communicative achievement because you're using the right language. The organization is, that's, you're really going to get, you know, you're going to get higher marks for organization if you organize things, if you plan it in advance. So yeah, I would definitely keep the organization just really obvious and really clear. You know, this is the first paragraph. It is the paragraph which opens the, you know, article. This is the second paragraph and it has the first point, or, you know, keep it really, really obvious, really clear.
And using those linking words that we said before, firstly, secondly, it just adds a little bit more cohesion, a little bit more fluidity to the writing.
Did you notice the expression Kevin used for to begin something, to put pen to paper? So just remember with this expression, there are no articles or possessives or anything like that. It's not to put your pen or a pen to some paper or anything like that. It's to put pen to paper, so to begin something. Kevin also says that you need to put yourself in the right frame of mind. So if you're in the right frame of mind, you're thinking the right way for a task. So in this case, thinking like a business person, if you're writing a business report, you're in the right frame of mind. And that's all we're going to say for now about the writing exam, because I want to move on to listening. So the listening exam is obviously very different. You have no choice about what to answer, and you don't really have any choice about how long you take over each task. The examiner presses play, and you start writing down your answers. But you can, and you should, still use any small little pieces of time that you do have very sensibly, very wisely. So the second you see the questions, and before you hear anything, you should be planning your answers. You should be thinking about what you'll be writing.
So, of course, you should have a look carefully at the question and read through the question that you have. And imagine what kind of answer is required.
Yeah. If it's looks very obviously like it's going to be a number, then
of course,
you're thinking, and
very
you're listening often, for numbers, or
very often there is a number, sometimes there's a name, Sometimes there's a date.
Yeah.
So just firstly recognizing what the answer, what category the answer would belong to.
Sometimes you can almost even predict the answer.
Yes.
You know, it's pretty obvious the answer is almost certainly going to be this. And you don't have to rule out every other possible answer, but there's often a handful of answers you can say, look, I'm pretty sure I'm listening out for the word red or the number 12 or whatever it is.
Yes.
And you can just sort of confirm that and move on. Even just the type of word. Am I listening for a noun, an adjective, an adverb?
That's
really useful as well. And I think I would definitely underline sort of key words so you can look back very quickly highlight or something like that. We didn't really talk about kind of tips for improving your listening more generally, but I mean, doing practice exams is obviously really important, but you should be listening to everything, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's all around you, and you should, you know, take advantage of that. Radio, podcasts, TV, films, and trying to expose yourself to as many different accents as possible.
Yeah.
Because, of course, in the listening exercise, or in the listening part of the exam, sorry, I should say, there, it's not going to be one person with an accent that you know very well doing all of the speaking. There's going to be a variety of accents.
I mean, it tends to largely be British and American accents, but they'll always put in Irish, Scottish, Australian, South African. There's going to be kind of a variety of English native accents and sometimes non-native accents as well. So accents aren't everything, but it is useful to not just stay in a California Hollywood bubble and only ever watch American TV, and then, you know, when you hear my accent or your accent, then it's like, what's that? Wherever you are, you have access to English audio. It's going to be films, it's going to be songs, it's going to be people who speak English wherever you live. Obviously, if you're in Dublin or you're in a country, there's just language everywhere
all around.
So just stop. I don't know if you're on the bus, just
turn off your iPod and listen to the people chatting on the bus.
Yeah, you know? Just do a bit of eavesdropping.
There's always you overhear two people question in the exam. So overhear some people on the bus. Practice it.
Finding out some terrible secrets about
exactly
people,
so, you know, maybe don't listen in on very private conversations, but there's nothing wrong with a little bit of eavesdropping to improve your listening skills. So this is the verb to eavesdrop, the word we use to deliberately listen to a conversation that is maybe not meant for us. So to eavesdrop on a conversation, we use it with the preposition on. A similar expression, but in a slightly different situation, is to overhear something. So if you overhear something, you hear it by mistake. So, for example, if you are in an office and you're outside somebody's door trying to hear the conversation inside, then you're eavesdropping. If you walk past someone's door and the people inside are just speaking very loudly, then you might overhear them. And, you know, there's an important difference. So let's get back to the listening exam and eavesdrop on Kevin and my conversation.
So when you do the exam, you know, you've got your different sections. There's multiple choice, there's a sentence completion, and then there's the multiple matching section, which students tend to hate because, you know, it's a really awkward question to answer, especially on the advanced exam, the multiple matching section. You're trying to answer kind of two pieces of information about all of the different speakers at the same time, and it's quite messy. So practice. I mean, I think you just need to do lots and lots and lots of practice exams. So are there any other things then you would advise in terms of doing the exam, or things to think about when you're doing it?
So one good thing would be if you're preparing for the exam, obviously you practice the listening tests, but then go back and listen again with the transcript, the actual written text, to see where you went wrong, to see where the mistakes were, or why you thought you heard something that actually they didn't say.
Because I think a lot of students, they do the practice test, they go, okay, I got 10 answers wrong, right, next one. And it was like, well, why did you get them wrong? Or why did you choose A when it was actually C? Or if there was a very obviously a distractor word, a word that's trying to distract you, and you picked it, you know, then why did you pick it, or what was the right answer, or something like that.
Yeah, the distractor is quite a common technique in these exams, will try and catch you out. You will very often be listening for synonyms of words that are in the questions and not the actual words that you see in the questions.
Yeah, if you hear the word, you should be thinking...
alarm bells should be ringing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So lots of synonyms, lots of... Maybe there's a phrase in the question, but it's an idiom in the audio, or it's a kind of a phrasal verb.
Yeah. And it's not using the phrasal verb in the question.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you're listening... Yeah, it's all of, like the whole exam, really. The synonyms are... everywhere.
Yes,
So,
look out for those distractor words. As Kevin says, alarm bells should be ringing. You know, don't trust any answers which seem suspiciously easy. Okay, so a few final tips then.
Any other pieces of advice then, or anything else you think is important?
You should remember that a lot of the time the question is asking you how the speaker feels, or what's the speaker's opinion, or what's the speaker's approach to something. It's not so much about what they actually said. Things like reporting verbs, admitted, denied, or adjectives of feeling like relieved, excited, confused. These words might not, or most probably will not, be used in the listening if they're in the questions. So starting to, you know, think about how people are feeling rather than what were the actual words that somebody said.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's one of the big differences in these sort of higher level listening exams. You know, in lower level exams, it's just they say something and you're trying to catch what did they say.
The information,
Whereas this person is more like, oh, and when we won the competition, I was over the moon. And then you're like, how do they feel? Well, they felt very happy or something like that.
Yeah, so it's a case of like learning to sometimes read between the lines of what people are saying knowing these idioms that they use.
Yeah, and then as well, you know, I think as you very quickly realize when you do any Cambridge exams, unlike say the IELTS exam, which is, you know, the other big exam people often do, is that you hear things twice, and that's really different from real life. You know, you tend not to hear things twice. So you have that opportunity to really think about your approach. You know, do I want to, like say for example with the multiple matching, do I want to listen only to the first part the first time and only to the second part the second time if you're doing the advanced exam? And for other sections, am I trying to get as much as I can and then confirm, or am I sort of listening for particular answers? I mean, there's loads of different approaches, but it's a big factor in thinking about how you listen and how you approach it.
One of the dangers of listening twice is sometimes you will choose an answer the first time and you want to stick to that answer. That's your answer.
Yeah.
And of course, the second time gives you the opportunity to check and to see if really it is the correct answer. So don't be afraid to change your answer.
Yeah.
So be flexible the second time you listen.
And don't be lazy the first time and say, I'm here the second time.
That's the other danger thing. You know, I'm going to listen twice. I don't need...
So you should be frantically getting as much as you can the first time to... make the second time easier.
Yes, exactly.
All right, well, that is loads of information there. So maybe we can finish up there. So thanks very much.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right, cool.
So I hope that helps you with your Cambridge exam. Don't forget, for all the vocabulary, expressions and exam tips and more, you can visit the website, which is everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. There were lots of useful phrases in this week's episode. I hope you heard a few that you can use to eavesdrop and to overhear, to proofread, to put pen to paper, to be in the right frame of mind, to do something for the sake of it, and plenty more. So start putting them to use now when you're practicing for your exam. And that's the final part of our Cambridge Exams mini-series. Don't forget, there are General English and Business English episodes already up and ready for you to listen to. And next up, we're going to be doing 4 episodes on, you might have guessed, the IELTS exam. So keep an eye out for that. And special thanks to my guest, Kevin. Thanks also to Nouveau Noise, who provide the theme music for the show. And of course, if you like the show, please tell all your friends. And that's it. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.